Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
This is The Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Green light 3-0 and she's gone.
Welcome to the 3-0 show, part of the Athletic Baseball Show for Thursday, September 22nd. Derek Van Riper, Eno Saris, Caitlin McGrath back with us again this week. On this episode, we have a new president of baseball operations in Detroit. We'll talk about the future for the Tigers, the changes that are likely to ensue in the months and probably in the years ahead. Since we last spoke to Caitlin, the Blue Jays have closed in on one of the AL wildcards. The entire AL picture is becoming a lot more clear. Aaron Judge hit his 60th home run of the season on Tuesday night. We're recording this sort of midday Wednesday, so he might hit 10 more home runs by the time you get to hear this podcast. That would be pretty amazing if that happened. We're going to talk about some of the most improved players in this 2022 season, because I think when we were putting together our rundown yesterday, one thought we had was that there's been a ton of MVP talk because of Judge and Shohei Ohtani, and sometimes the other players that have done interesting things this year get kind of pushed aside, so we had to make up a bit of an award to put the spotlight on some players we felt really deserved a bit of attention here as the season winds down. But let's begin in Detroit with the big changes. Scott Harris is the new president of baseball operations. They will hire a GM. That was a question that I saw everybody was asking Cody Stavenhagen, who covers the Tigers for The Athletic. Yes, they will have a GM, even if they didn't in their structure. They'd still build a team. They'd still play next year, so no need to worry there. Interesting opening press conference, a lot of quotable things that came from Scott Harris, but the three tenets for the Tigers going forward seem like a pretty good place to start. Acquire, develop, and retain young players, good idea. Two, create a culture of development. Players should think they can come to Detroit and get better, good idea. And three, controlling the strike zone on both sides is key to everything. The best quote, though, I thought, from the entire press conference was when Scott Harris said, "I'm not sure it's a good idea to share the Giants' perspective of the Tigers' farm system," because as many people know, the Tigers' farm system is not in great shape right now. So, you know, I'll throw this to you first, since Scott Harris is coming from the Bay Area, coming from the Giants. So what's the general vibe around Harris taking on this position, and what do you think he's going to bring beyond the three tenets that he outlined for the Tigers going forward?
I think he's been well thought of, you know, through Chicago and San Francisco. And I think his reputation is mostly as a sort of contracts and rules guy, the guy that will make sure the negotiations run smoothly for the team on the team side in terms of free agents, in terms of what a good value is, where to draw the line in terms of free agent negotiations. I think they've done some good free agent work in San Francisco when he's been there. You think about Carlos Rodon, Jock Peterson, Wilmer Flores, a lot of these kind of incremental, smaller moves. I mean, Rodon is a bigger move, but, you know, it was also a one-year deal. And they've let sort of other guys go that went for longer deals like Kevin Gausman and so. So I think that is a little bit of a clue as to how he will act when it comes to free agency. And he also dropped a little clue about that in the press conference when he said, you know, we just need to make good decisions one by one by one and add them all up over time. And that reminds me of kind of the San Francisco process. You know, they're just acquiring guys in waivers. They're, you know, trying to do small free agent deals. They're just trying to make the right decision every time. And I think that's going to be his strength. From the rumors that I hear about, you know, how he's going to fill out the rest of his staff, I think he's going to bring on people with a real focus on player development and coaching. And that's going to be the other half of what he can bring. So he's going to be really good at negotiating contracts and free agency, and that's in sort of the business angle, the efficiency angle. That's a little bit of his background. And I think if he adds sort of a Batman or a Robin, you know, that can be someone that really firms up the player development process in Detroit. I think that'll be when he really finds his match and becomes really successful.
It did seem like player development questions were really starting to become the recurring theme at the end of Alavila's tenure in Detroit. So changing that aspect of the organization is critically important. You know, Caitlin, we had pretty high expectations for the Tigers just as a team on the rise. I don't know how many people believed they were going to be a playoff caliber team in 2022, but I think many people expect them to play meaningful games at least into August, if not into September. As you've kind of looked at this team over the course of the year, is there anything in particular that you think just went horribly wrong that might be bad luck? Do you think there's some actual rebound with the core they have in place? Like, how good does this team actually look compared to what we thought, and how far away are they from contending again?
Yeah, I think the Tigers are one of those examples where it's a reminder that development and team rebuilding and team progress isn't always linear. Like, there's a lot of times where you kind of expect a rebuilding team to get better every year as players gain experience, as they sort of reinforce that core group with more high caliber players. Obviously, I cover the Blue Jays, so they're a prime example of, honestly, when it mostly goes right for a team. I would say the Blue Jays are in that category right now. There's maybe not completely linear. If you look at, you know, 2019, they were totally rebuilding, and then 2020, they had that weird season for everybody. They made the expanded postseason, and then the next year they were close, but they didn't make it. So they did make those signings, the George Springers, the Marcus Semiens came in. They were a better team, but they still didn't get over the hump. They still were obviously like missing the postseason just by one game. So they were a lot closer than the Tigers were this year. But it's still that reminder that it's not automatic that just because you're a rebuilding team and you show some progress, the next year it's going to get even better. And so I think that's what happened with the Tigers this year, is that we had all these expectations, because last year I remember watching them towards the end of the year and they played the Blue Jays pretty tough. Like, the time that they played the Blue Jays, there was one instance where like the Jays at that point were not scoring very well, but the Tigers were pitching well, and they, you know, were playing well enough. They were kind of a scrappy bunch. And if anything, they sort of reminded you of this year's Orioles, where like they had a good bullpen. They have a good bullpen this year, like the Orioles, and you know, they're hitting enough. They have these young scrappy players, and they've kind of played with the chip on their shoulder. They had AJ Hinch that was like believing in them, and so you really thought like they were going to take a step forward. They made some free agent signings this year. I think the thing that, one, they had some weird circumstances happening with them this year. They had a lot of injuries. They didn't see maybe the steps forward from some of their young players that they were expecting. Obviously, injuries played into that as well. But in terms of their young core, you just didn't see them take the step forward necessarily. And again, that's just a reminder that young player development, again, isn't linear. It's not automatic that every single year a player is going to get better. There's tons of seasons where young players take a step back. I mean, to some extent, that's happened a little bit with the Blue Jays this year. They're further along in their careers than some of the Tigers' young players are. But, you know, we see with like Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr., like they've kind of taken steps back, although Bo's had such an incredible month of September that he's probably going to end up having similar numbers, honestly, that he had last year. But certainly Vlad has taken somewhat of a step back, even though that's just a step down to being an excellent player as opposed to being an incredibly excellent player. But
yeah, I think Spencer Torkelson's the kind of player. He went first overall in a draft. So expectations were, well, he played at three different levels in 2021. He's going to come up to the big leagues this year, and he's going to at least hold his own and stay in the big leagues all year if he's not already just an impact player in year one. But just thinking about Vlad Jr. as an example, I think in the time that I've covered baseball, or at least been an adult following baseball and could understand what was going on in minor league systems, there was as much hype around Vlad Jr. as there's been on any hitting prospect that I have ever seen as an adult. And when he came in and didn't immediately meet those expectations, people were disappointed because their expectations were in the stratosphere and he was just very good instead of elite right away. So it does take time, even for players that we have high expectations for. And again, I'm not saying Torkelson's pedigree or expectations were even in the Vlad Jr. stratosphere, but it's a good reminder. It doesn't happen right away. I mean, Riley Green even missed some time before debuting. He had a foot injury in spring training. He might have been on the opening day roster. That didn't happen. Eduardo Rodriguez, who was one of their big free agent signings, missed a lot of time for a personal matter. There was no way to foresee that. Austin Meadows going through something similar here, where he's missed a lot of time this year unexpectedly. You've had some injuries on top of all that. It's just, it's this perfect cocktail of the things that can go wrong really quickly, especially when you build and you've got good young pitching. A lot of their young pitchers have been hurt and will miss significant time going into 2023 as well. And I think that's part of where the thing that makes a lot of sense to me, you don't look at this team and put a timetable on it right now, because it in that division, it might happen sooner than you expect. But because of some of the issues they're dealing with health-wise that are long-term issues, it might take longer than you want it to if you're a Tigers fan. So I'll kind of throw this question to you first. You know, how many core players do you think the Tigers truly have in their organization right now? Guys that are absolutely key contributors on their next playoff team?
There's a bad answer to this.
Can we have the honest answer?
It might be zero. The names that come to mind are Riley Green and Spencer Torkelson, and both of them showed incredibly kind of obvious flaws that may keep them ever from being top talents. I mean, Green continued to show holes in his swing and is projected for about a 29% strikeout rate. The upper echelon of what's acceptable in the league is around 30, 33. So he's right there. So if he can improve his patience and not swing as many balls and try to avoid swinging that hole that he's got, you know, he does have athleticism. He does have power. He does look good as a baseball player out in the field. But like sort of statistically, it doesn't look that amazing. Spencer Torkelson, you know, I think is too much of a push hitter. Doesn't take advantage of pull power like he should. Right now, the opposite field homer is down twice as much as the pull homer. And he's kind of an opposite field guy with right center power. The power disappeared this year. Maybe it's due to that ball situation, but he didn't really show anything stand out except for maybe max exit velo showing that there's some raw power underneath. So I'll give him one of the two. You know, as taking a step forward next year, and then maybe Baez can be a defense first guy as his bat declines. But they're looking for a couple other guys to step forward, and that's where I think coaching is going to be a big aspect of it. Maybe you can coach Green and Torkelson, then you have two. You're still looking for a couple other guys to join the party. You know, but you can also just look at the pitching, and I have to say there's probably some failure of pitching coaching going on there. And then on top of it, it's just strange to me, culture-wise, to have two players that left the team and just left the team. Like, just left. They just left. They left, and they said they weren't feeling good, and I don't know, maybe that's just, you know, it's a bad team and they were having some issues, and I'm not trying to, you know, belittle Austin Meadows' issues. Like, he was saying that he was having some mental health issues and he released a statement about it. But Eduardo Rodriguez is having the same sort of thing. Is there not a support system in place for these guys? Why did it take this sort of like huge break? Why wasn't there just like a behind the scenes, like, hey, you know, we can do something for you. We can give you a soft landing. Why did it have to be this whole like, we don't know where Eduardo Rodriguez is? You know, like, remember that? Why did this Austin Meadows thing come out of left field? Why did Austin Meadows have to make the statement? You know, why wasn't it just leave Austin alone? AJ can tell you a little bit of something, or PR will give you a little bit of a leak or something to like, you know, oh, he just needs some time. You know, why does Austin Meadows have to like make a statement? So there's something in the culture there that needs to be fixed.
I was going to say, also, I feel like just from like reading Cody's stuff on them, but also just like following the Jays, like there's been kind of weird decisions there too, in terms of like, even this year, like they had such a muted trade deadline, and like obviously Alavia is gone now, and so perhaps part of the reason why he's gone is he didn't act enough at the trade deadline. But you know, they had a pretty good bullpen, they had some pieces there that they could have traded. Jimenez was a guy that I know Jays fans were like, you know, would have loved to have, and Soto. He's a guy that's like, do you yeah, Soto as well, like, do you can you guarantee that they're going to repeat what they've done this year, and B, does it do you any good if they do, if you're not even a competitive team next year? Mm-hmm. Like, why don't you move these guys now when they have a little bit of control? You're going to get something for them. I mean, that's part of team building and progress too, is also acknowledging when you're not good enough and you got to reset a little bit or pivot a little bit.
He was stuck, right? It's like he'd already done the rebuild. If he starts rebuilding some more, he's putting the target on his back. So
right, but then it's like also you're just shooting your own team in the foot too. Yeah, right. If you're like not acting. Yeah. Like, so there's just been a lot of weird decisions in Detroit too, and maybe this is the beginning of a different team building style, a different development style, all these types of things will help. But yeah, like if you look at the Tigers over the past couple of years, it's been you're scratching your head a little bit about some of those decisions. And I just remember, like, because I think the Tigers were actually in Toronto right ahead of the trade deadline, and we were all expecting there to be maybe some sort of movement, one of those like cross diamond trades, and it didn't happen, and there was like hardly any. And the Jays were a good trading partner for the Tigers.
Michael Fulmer and maybe Robbie Grossman, like guys who were not going to be there anywhere next year. And but you know, I do like that he was talking about the strike zone, because the Tigers have the worst chase rate in baseball, and you know, part of that is making a poor signing like Javi Baez, which I honestly just think was a poor signing, you know, given the way that his kind of play discipline ages, you know, I think that Scott is going to be someone that wouldn't make that kind of signing. He's talking about the strike zone, and then he knows that they're the worst chasers in baseball. He's going to do something about that. Like that's the thing that the Giants did. They didn't chase and they tried to barrel. So, you know, he's going to try and do that, and he's going to put an emphasis on the coaching staff, which is something that San Francisco did. So, I would expect to see some real coaching staff hires, and like I said, a player development GM, if that makes sense.
All right, so we've got expanded playoff fields. We've got the Tigers playing in a weak AL Central. We've got a franchise that, under the late Mike Ilitch, would actually spend a lot when they are competitive. We don't know if Christopher Ilitch follows that. Mm-hmm. But I think compared to the other teams in the division, they'll spend just as much as anybody else they're playing against, and possibly a lot more. Eventually, after next season, the Miguel Cabrera contract winds down. So that opens up a sizable amount of AAV under whatever predetermined limits they have of themselves. So there could be some big changes. And I know you didn't like the Baez contract when it happened. You know, I think if you need a little reason to continue to be optimistic as a Tigers fan, consider that the Padres, before becoming this version of the Padres, signed Eric Hosmer to that big deal. And everyone said, why did they do that? And they've still ascended to this level of, you know, seemingly a perennial contender for the next little while, at least. So when do you think this Tigers team plays a postseason game again, Caitlin? What year is it going to be when we're talking about the Tigers playing meaningful October games again?
Honestly, the best, you know, advantage for the Tigers is the fact that they play in the AL Central, and that it is still an extremely winnable division, I would say. The other teams, I mean, maybe Chicago doesn't have such a strange up and down year next year. You know, maybe they play to their true talent. That's probably a good bet. But certainly you still look at the Central and there's so many question marks. The Cleveland Guardians, they're such a young team that, again, they could reasonably take a step back because, again, like we said earlier, these things don't always go in an upward trajectory very smoothly. The Tigers are kind of, the Twins are kind of a, I don't know, a confusing team to understand right now. I don't quite I saw them earlier this year and thought, yeah, this team is pretty good. Like they hit a lot of balls, they hit a lot of home runs, they have a pretty good lineup. So I don't totally understand what's going on with the Twins other than the pitching hasn't been good enough and they've kind of been bad at the worst time of the year. But I think the Tigers, like, there's still pieces there. I think obviously there's some work to be done. Like you guys talked about, maybe there's not as many core pieces there than they thought. There's probably a lot of work to do on the pitching side because, again, some of those injuries to their young players will spill into next season. So you'd think they need to make a couple significant or significant-ish signings to shore up that rotation. The bullpen has been good for them this year, and bullpen's usually an easy area to fix. The offense is really bad, though. Like, they, beyond, like Eno was saying, that, you know, they swing and miss a lot, they chase a lot, they don't score runs. I think they're among the worst offense in baseball, if not the worst offense in baseball, certainly one of the worst in the American League. They just don't score runs. They don't play a lot of guys. I don't think they hit a lot of home runs. They just don't do a lot of that well, and that's how you score in the majors right now, is often, like, hitting a lot of home runs, hitting the ball really hard, like, you know, putting the ball in play, all these types of things that they're not very good at doing. So that is going to take a lot of work. As you guys said, like, it could be coaching, it could be adding new players, it could be, you know, changing guys' approach or swing or whatever it may be. But that's going to take a lot of work because I think, you know, pitching, they always say pitching wins games, but I think offense is a huge indicator of success for a team. So that to me is maybe a huge question mark. But again, like, the Central is probably going to remain the Central next year. I'm not convinced that there's anyone that's a huge favorite in that division. I think it would, again, be probably Chicago next year, but with a huge question mark beside that. So there's a chance for them, I think.
Yeah, it's really interesting in that division because, as you mentioned, like, Chicago, you know, their player development is not well thought of, and they have to make some changes in their coaching staff, or maybe it's already been made. But, you know, they have some issues with chasing, and they have some poor approaches at the plate too. Like, I've just watched the White Sox last night, and I don't know how they scored as many runs as they did because every guy got up there and was swinging at everything. And the Guardians have, like, a really cool, like, approach, but their offense hasn't been good. You know, like, it's cool. Like, I love it. They don't strike out. They hit a bunch of singles, but, you know, it also is prone to just going fallow for like a month at a time. And they get held afloat by their pitching, but they're gettable, you know, especially for a team that might spend more than them. So, you know, I'm the king of wafflers, so I'm going to put together the Tigers' plan for contention. In 2024, they will have only Austin Meadows as their core. They'll have Austin Meadows, Javi Baez, Eduardo Rodriguez, Skubal, Mize on the pitching staff, and Torkelson and Green, right? So that'll be their team. Let's say one of Green and Torkelson steps forward and becomes like a legit star, like a young, not like a superstar, and doesn't have to be, but like a legit, you know, front, like, third hitter, right? That's totally possible. Torkelson and Green could do that. Maybe both. I'm not going to give you both. But you have what you have are your veterans, your Baez and Eduardo Rodriguez, veterans that are, you know, slide down the lineup and slide down the rotation as the other team players get better around them, but are still there. So you have, like, a team. By the way, the 2024 Tigers will only have about $50 million of payroll. So even given previous spending, this year's $135, they may have by then $60, $70 million to spend on free agents. You know, when they do that is up to them. They're going to do the Scott Harris thing where they pounce on something that makes sense. I think they bring in the fences in right center, where that makes that much more of a pitcher's park than almost any other part of the park. It's right center. Everything dies. So I would bring in the fences there. They've done that. They did that in San Francisco to make it a more attractive place for hitters to sign. So they bring in the fences. They start, you know, catching some older guys like a Jock Peterson, right? You know, you start catching some older DH types and supplanting, you know, Miguel will be gone, and they'll have more flexibility in the roster. Then, you know, they improve their pitching coaching. I'm saying 25 or 26, you'll get postseason. I don't know if, like, we're talking about World Series, but 25, 26, they'll be a wild card.
I think they could sniff the postseason in 2024. I think they could be an Orioles of this year, a Mariners of 2021 sort of team 2 years from now. I actually think that's possible, because we listed all the different injuries and all the weird stuff that's happened to them this year. A lot of those players
Suppose
are still going to be there.
Just went better, just went right. It was with the same team, and it was went right. Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't look at this roster at the beginning of the year and say, absolute dumpster fire. That's not the state of the Tigers. I think this is going to prove to be a pretty good hire, and actually a team that does start to take those steps forward here in the reasonably near future.
And they're making the steps, right? Like, think about the Royals. Like, we just had a piece. We've had two pieces this year that have been like, Royals pitching development, absolute dumpster fire. Like, really? That's what the pieces have shown me. And what are they doing about it? And they just extended their GM. You know, they're just like, no, you know, we've got some hitters, we'll figure it out. Whereas the Tigers are like, no, we have a legitimate problem, and we're gonna actually do something about it. So,
looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So we're going to move on to the story that probably let off most podcasts in the last 24 hours. But we do things differently here. There are 30 teams in this league, and we like to
it's
try and
news.
Talk about all
Aaron Judge is good.
Aaron Judge is very good. Aaron Judge is almost certainly going to win the MVP. And it's just the question of how many home runs will he finish the regular season with. And we talked about this a little bit on Rates and Barrels, where this is a historically great Aaron Judge season. I think people are fully appreciating it for what it is. And it does, for me, kind of bring back memories of watching Maguire versus Sosa in 1998. And I started to wonder, too, if part of what enthralled us about that season was it was two guys going back and forth. It was like a head-to-head battle to break this record that seemed unreachable for so long. Obviously, the context of how they did it is sad in hindsight. But this was a part of baseball history before everybody was watching everything online all the time, where they would cut in on, at least in America, Caitlin, maybe it was different for you where you were, but they would cut in on Fox, like regular Fox, to show you what was happening in the home run race. There were weeknight nationally televised games, so you could watch Cardinals, watch Cubs.
Watching The Simpsons, and like they just cut in.
I remember sitting in the living room with my family. I was the oldest of three. All five of us were sitting there. I was a teenager. I was in high school at the time, watching the home run chase. And I can't remember a time in the 20 plus years since then where my family sat around and watched non-Brewers games together like that, right? We'd watch the Brewers together like on a random day, but we wouldn't just watch baseball like that. And I think people of all ages are kind of having an experience like that right now with Aaron Judge, where they're kind of stopping in awe and saying, this is absolutely incredible, especially in the context of what this season has been, where there's been a downturn in power league wide. So, Caitlin, I'm just kind of curious, what are your thoughts about this as just from the broader historical sense? And have you had a chance to fully appreciate it as someone that has to cover a different team in the division?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that the Blue Jays necessarily appreciate all those home runs Aaron Judge is hitting, but it was funny, though. Yesterday, like, I was watching the Jays game on TV, and it ended, that crazy game in Philadelphia, and our Sportsnet, cut to the Yankees game, and it was basically the ninth, I think, and it was just as Aaron Judge was coming up. And he hit the home run, and then obviously the Yankees came back to win. And I remember being like, "Oh, I'm so glad that I actually sat here watching it to see 60." Because even though I watch so much baseball and there's so much happening and I see a lot of things, it still was that I still had that feeling of like, "Oh wow, I'm actually glad I was sitting here watching it because I appreciate that I saw him hit 60." And Yankee Stadium, it was great to see that level of, you know, excitement and fandom from them. I'm glad it happened there because actually the Yankees are in Toronto this coming week. And there was some talk earlier, maybe he'll be in Toronto and hitting 60, 61. I don't think that's going to happen now because there's enough games between now and Monday that I think he'll probably get 61, especially facing the Pirates. Yeah, it's funny. There's kind of rare times where I get taken aback and sort of appreciate baseball moments. But certainly that was one of them where I was like, I'm really glad I was watching because it's just cool to see. And I remember last year, actually, I was lucky that Miguel Cabrera hit number
500.
And he hit it in Toronto. And I remember being like, oh, I'm glad I was here for that. But so sometimes that happens where, and I'm sure it's with Katie Wu covering Albert Pujols, it's like, yeah, you cover him, you're doing your job, but then also sometimes you sit back and you just are like, I'm really glad I get to watch this.
Yeah, that's cool. I remember I was in the fans, I was in the seats for Barry Bonds' 62nd that year when he hit 73, and it was pretty crazy, it's funny memory though. I hate to be wrong, somebody's gonna be like, he wasn't in San Francisco for 62nd. it could have been 63rd or 64th. I mean, I was young. I was in college. I'd hate to have gotten that wrong. But it was a big one of the big milestone ones that year. And I saw him in his prime. It's just interesting to think back to seeing Barry in his prime and seeing Judge now. And I think even then there was a sense of the kind of asterisks or whatever. And it's nice to kind of have one that doesn't have a little bit of a cloud over it. No matter, I still think Barry's the best hitter ever in the history of baseball, even with those clouds and those asterisks. But I can't say that I just look past them or that I, they affect me as much as anybody, maybe even more because I was, I was a Giants fan back then, so it was kind of, was sullied. And if you kind of look at the list of home runs ahead of Judge, you have to admit that there's a lot of asterisks about, a lot of the guys ahead of him. So it's kind of fun to see someone right now where the ball is dead. So you can't be like, well, it's a 2019 juice ball, we've got a fully integrated baseball, so it's not, oh, but they didn't allow, these type of people in. And it's not in the middle of, late 90s, early 2000s when we were pre-testing program. I don't want to say, I'm not going to go all the way and say that Barry's record is illegitimate and this is the new record. I don't feel that's true either, but it is, kind of cool to see Aaron Judge doing it, presumably without these asterisks above his head.
Yeah, you have that certain feeling every once in a while. It seems like every 10, 20 years you see players that come around that have seasons like this and you feel like no one can get them out. And I realize Aaron Judge struck out earlier in the game, I think with the bases loaded in a key spot. It was Giancarlo Stanton that hit the walk-off grand slam. But all that is to say, you have that sort of elevated expectation, this superhero sort of expectation for a player every time that he steps into the box. And that's just a cool thing to have. Because I think even as an adult, that kind of pulls you back into the childhood enjoyment of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I loved about Barry. And before that, when I was in Atlanta, I just thought Chipper Jones, anytime he's up, it's either a walk or he does something good. And the walk is good. It was the idea that something bad would happen was just not, you were just like, here it is. He's going to win the game. He's going to do the thing. And that's so awesome. And then when they do it, you're just like, yeah, I told you.
The best feeling in sports fandom is the I told you feeling after something goes right. Let's get to the AL playoff picture. Specifically, Jays really closing in on the wild card. I think the last time we spoke to you, Caitlin, the lingering concern was that the Jays had a lot of matchups with the Orioles. So if the Orioles played them well, the Orioles could legitimately put themselves in a position. And they're not out of it mathematically, but it just seems like the Jays have done enough to take care of business. Had that wild 18-11 win over the Phillies on Tuesday night. Remaining schedule is pretty tough. At Tampa for three. They get the Yankees at home for three. Red Sox at home for three. And I think they go back to Baltimore for three more. And I think there's something I've noticed about all of you as beat writers that you end up on the receiving end of fan venting. Like you're a therapist, even though you're not getting paid to be a therapist. People dump all of their team related baggage on you. And I'm just curious, as you've watched this team throughout the season, do you think the fans are rightfully concerned about any aspects of this club in particular? Are there recurring gripes that you receive as the Jays beat writer that you actually say, yeah, this is a concern. This is a potential problem once we get to the point where they're in the postseason?
I think the biggest thing with the Jays this year has been their unevenness, in that sometimes they do look like a serious World Series contender. And then sometimes they just, it's not coming together for them at all, whether it be because their pitching isn't clicking, their offense isn't clicking. They've had a lot of times this year where one is working and the other isn't. You know, they're pitching really well, but then they just can't score a run. And you're like, how is this team as stacked as they are not able to score runs? And then you see them score runs, and then all of a sudden, you know, Barrios will have a bad start, or Gausman will have a bad start. So there's been a lot of that this year where it's like they just, it was not coming together, and it was hard to figure out why. And I think this month, though, it has been coming together, I would say. Like, they've been playing really well in September. They have a really good record in September. You talk about tough schedule, they've handled it really well. They have won more games than the Orioles head-to-head this year. They handled those series really well. They just won the series in at home against Tampa. It was a five games in 4 days, and they won three of them. So they've done good job handling like the assignments this year, I would say. You know, they just recently took 2 of 3 against the Orioles. They didn't sweep them. They had the chance to sweep them. And then the rarity of Jordan Romano blowing a save, which he's never done at the Rogers Center. So you kind of just throw that one away. Okay, you know, he was due a bad one. And then, yeah, they go into Philadelphia, and maybe the timing of them in Philadelphia is good for them because the Phillies are kind of having their own offensive struggles, although they scored 11 runs and still lost yesterday, which is kind of sad. But that, I think the Blue Jays, I would say, if fans are worried, it would probably be that inconsistency or that unevenness cropping up again in the postseason. And again, it's like a 3-game series, and we've seen the Blue Jays like not be able to score over 3 games. They got swept by the Angels last month, and you know, one game was against Shohei Ohtani, so you kind of were like, okay, well, you can throw that one out. And Alek Manoah pitched really well in that start, and it was a really good pitcher's duel, and Jays just couldn't score. But yeah, they were heavily outscored by the Angels over 3 games. And like, yeah, on paper, the Jays probably match up favorably against both the Rays and the Mariners, who are probably going to be the other wild card teams. But, and even Cleveland, I guess, if you're assuming that they're going to be the central winner. The Jays match up well against any of those teams, but over 3 games, a 3-game series, it's totally possible that they just all of a sudden won't be able to score. You know, this month in particular, they've been relying so much on Bo. He's been driving in a ton. Now you're seeing other guys kind of turn it on a little bit. Danny Jansen's been hitting well lately. Teoscar Hernandez had a good game yesterday. Vladdy's showing signs that he's getting there. There's a little bit more balls in the air from him. Springer's looked better lately. So maybe it is coming together all at the right time, but I would say the biggest worry, and it's probably legitimate, is this, like, that unevenness that they've shown signs of this year.
Yeah, I think that's a symptom of a lot of teams, though. I think that's just the nature of baseball. It's the downside of 162, or the upside, depending on your perspective, that anyone can go through stretches like that. Because when you take a step back and you look at how this team is built, the thing that's always stood out to us since this team became as good as it's been for the last 2-ish years now, it's the damage they do. It's that they're one of the league's best offenses, but they don't strike out. That's such a great trait to have up and down your roster. And we talked about some of their strengths, I think, the last time we spoke to you. And I guess the other player, the only player that I see on this roster that I'm like really wondering about is Lourdes Gurriel Jr. Where'd the power go? This is really bizarre. He's got 5 homers this season in 121 games, popped 21 a year ago, popped 20 back in 2019. That was just over 84 games. I know you're the rabbit ball, but that's a massive drop-off in power to have 5 in 121 games. So, you know, seeing this team on a day-to-day basis, is there anything you've noticed that explains where that power has gone?
Well, he's also become a kind of a different hitter. If you look at other, like he's not hitting as much home runs, but he's doing other things well. He's not chasing as much. I think he's walking more. He's striking out less. He's putting the ball in play a ton. I think he's close to, or for a while there, he was close to hitting 300, or his average is hovering around then. If anything, he's kind of looking more like his brother in the sense of how Yuli just puts the ball in play, hits a bunch of singles, goes the other way, has good plate discipline for the most part. Like Lourdes looks like he's made some adjustments and he's almost looking more like his brother. I'm not sure that he's tried to do that. I think he's tried to have a better approach. I think he's tried to make better decisions at the plate, not chase as much. And he's got such sort of like long limbs, and he's got such a swing that covers so much of the plate that he actually can get to a lot of balls that maybe other players can't get to and can put good swings on them. But he's still making those good decisions. And I think that it's just been a symptom of that, I think. And maybe like once he kind of adjusts to that adjustment, or that's the player he becomes, maybe the home runs come back a little bit, you know, as he gets more comfortable with this approach. But what I've seen from him this year, and he's been injured lately, so we haven't seen him in a little bit, but it's just been like, yeah, he's become more of like a singles, like slap style hitter. Like he's just putting the ball in play a ton. And yeah, you kind of, I don't know, it is a okay trade-off, I think, for the Jays, because if anything, he's actually a more useful type of hitter for the Jays right now, because they have enough guys that hit for power. They have, you know, Springer can hit for power, Bo can still hit for power. He's kind of found that stroke. Vlad, obviously, Teoscar Hernandez, obviously, Matt Chapman hits a ton of home runs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so if anything, it's actually more beneficial if the Jays have a guy like Lourdes who's actually more similar to what his brother does, and that he just, like, you know, gets on base, puts the ball in play, takes his walks when they come and doesn't strike out, and has those good, sees a lot of pitches. That's also helpful too. I think before he was prone to sort of just swing at everything. Now you're seeing him make a lot better decisions at the plate. The home runs have come down, but I think the trade-off has been worth it for him.
You know, one thing that's interesting to me is that if you look over the last month, basically they've got 8 hitters that have been league average or better. I mean, Biggio's close, 93 WRC plus. I know there's no average there, but because he walks so much, it's pretty close. Teoscar's not had the greatest month, but it's around league average. And then you have this collection of guys that they kind of need to step forward to really make it a full 9. And maybe they need 2 guys out of there if you don't believe in Biggio. And that group is Tapia, Espinal, Gurriel, Merrifield. And they haven't been getting it out of the last month, but I think you're right to point out that Gurriel makes this contact, because so does Espinal and so does Tapia. And I think, in fact, part of the reason why, and maybe it didn't work out, but part of the reason why they traded for Tapia was, you know, defense in center field and this contact ability. And we know that contact ability makes more of a difference when you get to the postseason. So at the very least, their worst hitters, I think we said this about the Mariners recently too, at least their worst hitters make a lot of contact, you know? And in any given 3-game stretch, they could be the reason, they could put the ball in play that drives in the runs that wins the game. And it's less likely that they just strike out 3 times in a game and hand you that golden sombrero. So, you know, I think it's a good lineup. The one thing that kind of occurs to me, that this is not original or anything, but it just occurs to me again looking at this. Who's their lefty hitter?
Their best lefty hitter?
Do they have any? Like
left-handed hitter,
yeah.
You mean? Tapia, Biggio.
Biggio is a switch.
Yeah, they're a
right?
Very right-handed team.
Bradley Zimmer and Jackie Bradley Jr.
Right. It's not a fearsome group of lefties.
No, but they have this weird tendency where like they crush right-handed hitting this year, and they actually don't hit lefties really well, which is weird because they are a completely right-handed lineup.
I was talking to a hitter about this, JD Davis, who's like a righty who has reverse splits, And he said, you know, and I'm watching my kids play Little League. There are very few lefties. You know, by the time you get to the big leagues, a righty has seen a million righties. And so they probably, if they can make it in the big leagues, they can hit righties, you know? Mm-hmm. But a lefty who makes it to the big leagues may not have seen as many lefties, you know, just by the numbers has not seen it and didn't see it in Little League and didn't maybe see it in college as much. There's just not as many lefties. So, you know, maybe it's not that big a deal.
I do remember playing in Little League way, way back in the day. We had two left-handed pitchers.
Everybody move over.
I was a right-handed hitter, and the like two lefty pitchers, I couldn't hit them.
You couldn't even see them.
If I could have had, you know, 10 at-bats against them in a game, I would have been fine eventually, because it wasn't like they were throwing hard. They weren't throwing filth. It just comes out of the hand different, takes a minute to pick it up, and... Yeah, so I think that all checks out. Yeah, to be a righty in the big leagues, you saw so many righties, you were filtered out if you couldn't handle same-handed pitching. You didn't make it. You got weeded out somewhere along the way.
Guys tend to think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort, but it's possible to have it both ways. I'm all set for summer thanks to Mack Weldon. The Vesper polo shirt is so breathable you can wear it on the golf course, but it looks classy enough to wear to a party. The Maverick Tech chino short is ultra flexible, and the Pima crew neck t-shirt is perfect for those casual weekends. There's no need to be uncomfortable in your clothing ever again. Some guys just want to look good without calling attention to themselves. Mack Weldon apparel gives you understated good looks for understated confidence. Mack Weldon clothes are designed to fit your style and the demands of modern life. They look like regular clothes, but feel like the latest in modern comfort. They're the go-to choice for guys who want to look great without even trying. Breathable underwear that keeps you cool, dry, and comfy all day. Crazy comfortable but elevated sweatpants. An upgraded classic polo with antimicrobial silver threads. An ultra-soft antimicrobial tee for when you need to stay fresh longer. That's the Silver Crew Neck T-shirt. Get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code MLBSHOW. That's MackWeldon.com. Promo code MLB Show.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Let's get to our most improved players in 2022. There's so many ways you could do this. You could talk about individual skills. You could talk about year-to-year war risers. I'm curious from a process perspective, you know, what do you care about more? The actual result or the underlying improvement that might be supporting that change?
That's a great question. I mean, I don't want necessarily someone who was great and got greater. Because if you look at the war to war change and leaderboards, it's Aaron Judge is number one. I think he might get some other hardware. So I don't think, you know, usually the guy who wins the MVP is going to be on this board somewhere. But then you get a collection of guys who were injured last year. Or guys that weren't good last year, and then sometimes you get they weren't good last year because they were injured. So like Alex Bregman is the fifth biggest riser on the hitter side. He had a big he said a golf ball or at least a big cyst on his wrist that he got removed in the offseason, and he feels a lot better, and that's a big source of why he's better this year. I think Jeff McNeil was hurt much of last year. He's third. I even think Eugenio Suarez was hurt for a lot of last year, and he's second. So, you know, I kind of want to say that I want a guy who wasn't just hurt last year, but then that's so interlaced with production, right? It's like a lot of the guys who were bad last year and are good this year had like underlying injuries that they were dealing with.
Okay. No, this makes sense though. No, because I think the injured players would be eligible for something like comeback player of the year or rebound player of the year because they were good before. Alex Bregman was a very good player before.
We're parsing the word value in MVP.
we're trying to hand out more trophies. The world is happier when there are more trophies, more awards to argue.
So is Alex Bregman a comeback player of the year or most improved? He's a comeback. Yes. So most improved, what you want is like a younger guy who took a step forward.
I think so. Does that wear with you, Caitlin?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if I was, or not even just like a younger player, but also like a player that could have just been average his whole career and then finally like puts it all together. Like sometimes those are like those late bloomers, right? Like in the history of, Jays, it's like Jose Bautista, you hold him up as one of those guys where it's like, you know, he finally got the playing time. He made this adjustment with his swing and just like leaned into obviously the pull side power that he had, and he just became this incredible home run hitter in a different era, but still like, so yeah, I think that it's either a young player like making that adjustment or it all coming together, or it's someone that's kind of a late bloomer type. Like on the Jays, for example, it's pitching, but you look at Ross Stripling, like he's probably a good candidate for most improved. And like maybe part of it is just not getting the runway opportunity in years past. I know with the Dodgers, he was really good, but the Dodgers just had so many pitchers that it was like he always was that swing man because that's the only way he fit in. And even with the Jays for the first little bit, he was again just that guy that like swung between the bullpen and the rotation. And this year, he's kind of been a key guy for them when Hyunjin Ryu went down. He got this basically this year-long runway if he wanted it to be one of their starting pitchers, and he has run with it. Obviously now he's coming off his worst start of the season against the Phillies, but before that he's been really great. I think it had been like 16 straight starts or something where he had allowed 3 earned runs or less. He's, you know, hasn't been pitching deep necessarily. The Blue Jays have been kind of using him, but I think to his benefit honestly, because he's he'll be a free agent, I guess, after the season. So it's contract year for him, and this came at a good time. Probably earned himself maybe a decent paycheck, honestly. Perhaps even a discussion about a qualifying offer. But yeah, I would like pick him as the most improved, I guess, on the Jays because, you know, he had the pieces, but it's all come together for him this year.
I think Stripling is really interesting too because, you know, we kind of had like to talk about something being most improved, you had to have an idea of what they were before and what they were after. So you kind of have to have pretty good sample on both sides. Like, for example, Spencer Strider is number one in WAR improvement over last year. We got like 3 innings or something. How many innings did we get from last year?
Didn't have any sort of season to compare it to. Even Alek Manoah, who would also be improved, he spent more time in the big leagues this year, so it doesn't necessarily fit him perfectly, even though he is better this year.
I like this one. I think a lot of the narrative comes together. Kyle Wright.
Kyle Wright's a great call for that. Yeah.
We were but it's really borderline. Like, did we know? I think Kyle Wright is much better this year. And you can look under the hood and say, he did this. He switched his fastball. He's pitching differently, blah, 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 blah. Before this year, he had 70 innings. So maybe we just didn't know how good Kyle Wright was.
This is a different conversation after a few cocktails, I think, just from thinking about the universe and our existence and all these things. But the reason why I think Kyle Wright would be eligible for something like this, as opposed to Spencer Strider, is because you're talking about someone who's been up and down a few times, someone who was a candidate to fill in the rotation or in the bullpen in years past. Spencer Strider just wasn't ready until the end of last season. Manoah wasn't ready time-wise until early last season. So there was no opportunity previously. When we previously saw Kyle Wright in the big leagues, he wasn't missing a ton of bats. He wasn't throwing strikes. And he had a home run problem. Like, none of the skills looked good. Nothing worked. And then he did make all those changes. And that has put him in this position to be a very valuable member of that Atlanta rotation. He's more or less the pitcher that, on paper, many people were expecting Ian Anderson to be coming into the season. He just took that spot. That counts for sure. Because Kyle Wright looked like a potentially failed first-round pick, fifth overall pick in 2017, who was a replacement-level guy, who was going to be up and down, eventually in the bullpen, and that was probably going to be it. And now he looks like a consistent mid-rotation guy. So 100%, he counts, he's eligible. I think it's good. We're defining what these awards should be, because then we can actually put the hardware out there and award it in a future week. I was wondering, too, is Jose Quintana eligible for this? Is a late season renaissance?
Second,
does that count?
Second in WAR adding with a minimum of 100 innings pitched.
Where did that come from? I kind of think that has a case because, to my knowledge, it wasn't a major injury that wiped him out last year. He just looked like he was done. And then the Pirates bring him in. I thought, oh man, the Pirates are just going to use this guy to eat innings. It's going to be really sad. No, the Cardinals traded for him. And then he's pitched well in St. Louis, too. So, I mean, I think a player like that probably fits into this conversation, too.
Yeah, I think I'd give a little bit of an eye for sustainability. Because if you want to say most improved, you want to think that they have ascended to a new level that they will continue to be at. Whereas I think maybe Quintana maybe takes a step back next year just because of aging. You know, it's just he's an older guy. So I think my ballot would look something like Wright, Stripling, Jeffrey Springs. I think that would be my top three on the pitching side.
Yeah, you kind of got to go pitcher and hitter separately, and you could probably even separate it by league if you really wanted to get that deep. Again, once we have the official hardware.
What are these young hitters that have established new levels? Because that's not... as easy. When I'm looking at the improvers, I think a lot of these are veterans that were just kind of hurt last year. I'll throw out some names of young guys that might have ascended to a new level. Maybe we're seeing a new level. Christian Walker.
He's a little old too, but he fits more into what Caitlin was describing with Bautista, where he didn't get a chance until he was 28.
Yeah.
So. He's kind of proving that what he did that first year when he got the opportunity is real because he's been even better with the underlying numbers this year.
Jerickson Profar was not hurt last year. He's just changed his approach. He doesn't chase as much. He's found a little bit of that power that was missing. But is it sustainable? I don't know. What's he going to look like next year? But I think Profar, you know, deserves to be mentioned in this context. Yordan Alvarez is up 2.7 wins. Is that just like Judge? Is that just like a great player getting better?
It's a little bit like Judge, and I keep saying this on the fantasy shows, but I'll put it out here too just to create more receipts. I think Yordan Alvarez is the hitter in the league most capable of having an Aaron Judge power spike. Like, I think if we're talking about someone who could pop 50-plus
like
next year.
Who could win a Triple Crown? The list is very short. I think it's like Judge, yep. Alvarez. I don't think Betts has the power anymore. Maybe a Manny Machado, like a peak Manny Machado year. Paul Goldschmidt.
I think Vladdy could do it.
Vladdy could still do it.
He was pretty close last year for a while there.
Yeah.
I think that's the type of player Yordan Alvarez is. So we've reached that point where it's like, improve? I mean, sure, I guess anything's possible. But when he does it, we're just going to be like, well, he won the MVP and maybe he got the Triple Crown that year too. So it doesn't fit into this conversation, even though it does deserve a mention.
I didn't realize how close Aaron Judge was to the Triple Crown this year.
Yeah, he's got it right now. You know?
Yeah. I guess I didn't realize how high his average was. I mean, obviously,
didn't
the power
expect
was there.
Because of the bat, yeah, because of the strikeouts, yeah.
Yeah, but I was like, oh, he's actually has a really high average.
Here's my name for like a Kyle Wright. This is my Kyle Wright. Ian Happ?
Yes, I had Happ. I had him on the. I scribbled a bunch of names on the rundown or typed them furiously, like Kermit.
He's had health issues in the past and had a hard time staying on the field, but I also think that he's established a new level of play.
Yeah, I think with Happ, it's another example of a player changing his approach and doing it for the better. Because Ian Happ's biggest flaw, I think, as an offensive player, has always been strikeouts. 29.1% K rate. He's at 23.9% this year. He still draws walks. He has power. He's still getting into the power consistently, even though the barrel rate's down right now. This is a better version of Ian Happ, even though it's like a different path to being a more valuable player than the one he was previously on.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, he's had some seasons where in 100 or 200 plate appearances, he had a similar production in terms of WRC plus or OPS plus or whatever. But those were also 100 to 200 inning plate appearance seasons where we still have that. It's like kind of the Kyle Wright up and down. Like we didn't know if he was that good. You know, what if he'd had another 300 plate appearances and sucked for those? You know,
it's true. Very true. So a good group of names. Official hardware, of course, will come out in October. But I felt like we had to make a case for this to be an award that we care about, even if it doesn't exist in real life.
Comeback. Yes, I like that because the comeback is almost always a guy that was injured before.
Yes.
Or like had to miss the season for reasons or whatever.
Yeah, you're overcoming adversity on the health front. You know, I think that's a good way to kind of keep players on that side in that particular award. We are going to go on our way out the door. A few things. You can give us follows on Twitter. Follow Caitlin at Caitlin C. McGrath. You need the C.
Yeah.
I think I've tagged you once in a tweet. Is the other Caitlin McGrath or one of the other Caitlin McGraths like a prominent meteorologist or something?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I sometimes get weather tweets.
Yeah.
She probably gets
Who told
Jay's
me it was
going to
rain today? You're the worst.
Yeah. And people are yelling about, you know, I don't know, Vlad not hitting enough to her. Like, I'm just a weather girl.
The worst one of all has to be Mark Zuckerman, the Nationals writer for Masson, because he gets all the tweets directed at Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh.
Shares many of them. So, yeah. So, Caitlin C. McGrath on Twitter. Eno's at EnoSaris. I'm at Derek Van Riper. If you got a question for a future episode, send it to the Rates and Barrels email, ratesandbarrels@theathletic.com. Just let us know that it's for the 3-0 show. We're happy to answer that. And if you don't have a subscription to The Athletic, you can get one for $1 a month for the first 6 months. Great time to get in before the playoffs. TheAthletic.com/baseball show will bring you to that offer. That's going to do it for this episode of The Athletic Baseball Show. We are back with you on Friday.
You've always got the green light here.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.